We're in 1 Corinthians 6, and I spoke a lot last week about the first few verses, and probably half of you weren't here. And so I'm going to go over it again a little bit. I may or may not get into my next part of it, but we ain't in any hurry. But, you know, in chapter 5, when Pastor was talking about, there was a man who created a great sin in the church, and they had to judge it. They couldn't just let it go on in the church. And so they had to judge it. Now, we have a problem with that word judgment because we've been taught wrong about it, for one thing. It's not a bad thing. It's something that tells you what's right and what's wrong. And our problem with it is that we like to go around pointing at each other and telling each other what's right and wrong in your life when you got your own problems to deal with. And, you know, we talk a lot about the mote and the beam and all that stuff. You know, it doesn't take much to block your vision. I mean, the sun's how many times bigger than the earth, and I can blot it out with one finger. Okay? So, whatever is in your eye can blot out what you see and distort it, and all kind of things can happen. And so, it's not our business to judge another person's daily life, whether they're moving on with the Lord or what have you. I mean, you know, we all have faults, right? I mean, want to see me prophesy? Watch this. Brother, you have faults. Am I right? I'm a great prophet. Okay, so it ain't no big thing. But, you know, in Romans 14, toward the end of the chapter, Paul says, "Who art thou that judgest another man's servant? To his own master he stands or falls." Okay? So, I might think you're doing a terrible job of being a Christian, but what does God think is what matters? Are you meeting His standards at that minute, at that moment in time? Are you making the grade? Are you on the curve or ahead of the curve or anything behind the curve? He's the one that determines whether you're on track or not. He determines even when it's over. And He'll let you know. Paul said, "I've kept the faith. I've finished my course." We take courses in school and college. And all along the way, you're learning. Now, they don't expect me in second grade to know calculus. So, why should I expect somebody to know something that I, just because I know it? So that's where we run into a lot of problem with judgment. But something as big as something heinous in the church, that's another deal. That's something that's going to affect a lot of people, cause people to stumble, cause them to be hurt. And so Paul said, you got to judge this situation. And they must have, because then in 2 Corinthians 2, you read about the result of that. That the man repented and he came back, and then Paul had to tell him, now you got to forgive the guy. You can't just keep holding this over his head now and making him feel bad to the point where you're going to destroy him. So now you got to have a forgiving heart and put that behind you. The whole idea of forgiveness is to reestablish a relationship. If we were best friends for years and something happened and now we can't forgive each other and come back together, why, we've destroyed something, and God's making it so that we can restore these kind of things. I mean, isn't that the whole idea of being reconciled to God? And how can you be reconciled to God and not be reconciled to each other? Okay, it doesn't make any sense. And so, now, Paul, he had to address something that was going on. And so, dare any of you, having a matter against another, go to law before the unjust and not before the saints? So he's given us some governmental things here to establish in the church to make us understand how does God operate in this kind of situation. And we're to put on the mind of Christ, right? Not our mind. Our mind just messes it up every way it can, every chance it gets. It just doesn't seem to go right because everything's based on self. It's not based on... Jesus didn't base anything on self. Love does not consider self first. It's at the end of the... You know, somebody had a thing, said joy stood for Jesus first, others second, you last. And if we would put that, you know, into practice more, and sometimes we don't even realize we're being selfish or thinking of ourselves first, but once you realize it, fix it, and then, you know, try to make it become part of a habit. Ask the Lord to establish it in your life. That's the main thing. Ask Him to help you do these things. Because you can't do them on your own without Him. Without me, you can do nothing. Zero. And so he said, dare any of you, having a matter, and that word matter is the word pragma. In the Greek, it means a business matter. And, you know, it could be commercial business, or it could be just something, but it's something between us, okay? It doesn't have to be money-making. It could be anything. And a person offends you, or maybe they didn't even mean to. I gave the example last week of Danny or me sell each other a car or something, and maybe you didn't know it was about to blow up. But it did. And now we have a matter between us. Right? So I could take him or he could take me to court, and we might get a judgment, but is it the right judgment? Is it according to what God sees and knows, or is it according to what evidence, who has the best lawyer? Right? Sometimes a guy can go in, I know of one case, I don't want to go into it, the guy was dead right, but he didn't take a lawyer with him. He thought he was so right that anybody could believe, but the lawyers had other games that they played that didn't let him even use his evidence. And so he lost, big time lost. Okay? So you can go into court dead right and somehow lose. Or you could go into court guilty of sin and get off. Okay? So I could get, they stirred up evidence against Jesus when there was nothing. Yeah. Okay? And, you know, everything had to be established under two witnesses, right? And the guy, or the sacrifice, had to have no blemish, right? So Pilate examined Jesus and found nothing wrong with him. Then he found out he was a Galilean. He sent him to Herod. Herod did all kind of things to him. Found nothing. Two witnesses said the sacrifice was pure, without blemish. Okay? Them guys agreed so much that he was not, had no fault in him, that from that day on they had become friends who had been enemies all the before that. Imagine that. Just examining Jesus made two people that were enemies, friends, reconcile them. And we can't do it amongst ourselves. That's what Paul ended up saying. Shame on you. Okay? So, you can go to law. And I think I had that word there. Open up there, buddy. Yeah. It's krino, to distinguish or decide mentally or judicially, by implication to try or condemn or punish. And you'll see it in a lot of different ways. Go to law is one of them. Sue and ordain. Call into question. Damn, condemn. Okay. And the word esteem is in there. Judge. All kind of words that come out of that. But you're going to go to law and you're going to try this person. And you're going to see what you can get out of them. Now, Jesus never tried to get something from anybody. He didn't have to. He had all things. Now, who else has all things? So why do I have to try to get 50 bucks out of you? What do I need to beat you up for that and make an enemy out of you? And cause there's going to be people that like you better than me. So now I put a split in the church. Mark them that cause division. Okay? And don't take sides. When you see that kind of a situation, we've had things here where there's two people, and you can take sides. And you can split the church. Now we got the L group and the Papa Can group over here. You know? That I think he was right. I think he was right. Well, guess what? Let God be true and every man a liar. Huh? Yeah. And so we want his justice, do we not? Okay. And I went through last week in Isaiah 9, it said judgment was going to be established in the kingdom of God. We went through Isaiah 11, which said that this man that God was going to raise up was not going to judge by the seeing of his eye or reprove by the hearing of his ear. Well, have you ever been to court, if you ever had to be on jury duty or whatever, maybe you were a defendant or a plaintiff or something, they have to present evidence. And it's evidence of I saw it or I heard it firsthand if it's a criminal case. They'll let you do kind of a, what do you call that, hearsay in a civil case, right? But in a criminal case, you got to be the, if you're on the witness stand, you're the guy that says, I saw him do it. I heard him say it. Okay? First-hand knowledge. And so, the jury has to listen to this. Now, how do I know the witness isn't lying? Well, the other lawyer has to cross-examine and try to trip him up and maybe even cast aspersions on his character if he can to make you think, why would you want to believe this person? He's done this in the past. And they're going to find out everything about you they can. And so, how do you know? I was on a jury once and I could only go by what's presented. Maybe there was some evidence wasn't presented. Maybe some was presented that was not true. And so I heard a lot of things. I saw a lot of things. And now I had to, me along with 11 other people, had to pass judgment on this man. And I'm sitting there going, Lord.
Yeah. But that's where you say so-and-so said this. And like you say, you've got to be the one to testify that perfectly. But there are exceptions to it. The person died, and there's trustworthiness attached to it, and I won't get into all the exceptions. You can use it. But you see that right there going to law before the unjust?
Yes.
That hearsay actually brings some justice to the court of law because they don't want to let just anything in.
Right.
It can't be verified.
Exactly.
Some kind of credibility.
And that's And that's the whole thing, is as a human, I don't know what God knows, but all I can do is go by what I saw and what I heard. And so as a witness, that happens, and then as a juror, you can only go by that. Now, there's people that out to get somebody. There's people that could profit if you lose big time. Like this lawsuit I was talking about, it was multi-million dollar industry that the man came against. And he lost, but he should have won. So there was an injustice there. But this is really between us, church people, okay? He talks about outside world, and he talks about in the church. And so we should be taking this before the saints. And the word unjust, we take it to the unjust, the adikos. Okay, dikos has to do with righteousness and right and that kind of thing. When you put an A in front of a Greek word, it means not. And so this means unjust, the wicked, the treacherous, specifically, heathens, okay, or people outside of God's kingdom. And you see it as unjust and unrighteous. And so we're not going to, I'm not going to go into it, but I've been there. I've been on a jury. I've been before the judge. And I've seen what can happen. And I had them call me all kind of names, and I said, I'd never want to meet that guy. That wasn't me. But they came into court and made it sound like that was me for the purpose of winning. And so where is the justice in that? And the Lord wants his people to judge rightly all through the Bible. That's one of the things why there was blood in the streets. There was all kind of injustice going on in Israel because the kings did what they wanted, not what he wanted. So we went on to talk about, go to the next verse. Do ye not know that saints shall judge the world? And if the world shall be judged by you, are ye unworthy to judge the smallest matters? Go to the next one. Know ye not that we shall judge angels? If you think it's one thing that we're going to judge the world, we're also going to judge the angels. How much more things that pertain to this life? And one thing that came to me while I was talking about that last week is, what if they bring Adolf Hitler in front of you? What if they bring somebody you knew in front of you? What if they bring somebody that did some heinous thing but repented? I know by that time, if I'm one of the people doing that, I'm going to have a lot more mercy than I have right now. I try to be merciful as much as I can, but I know that I could probably be more merciful. And God is a merciful God. And we got ideas in our head about judgment day and all kind of stuff. But I don't think we know exactly yet what God wants to do. And that's why we need to go hook into him and find out what he's about, really. Not what we think he's about, not how we think he would operate, but hear his voice so that at the very moment of something having to happen, you know what he wants to do and have the guts to do it. A lot of people knew what God wanted them to do, but then it came to push, come to shove. Now you got to do this, whatever it is. I want you to go to Jericho. I want you to walk 7 times around and shut up. That was a miracle in itself. seven once a day, and then the last day, seven times. So that's 13 times. That's the number of redemption. And the walls fell. Now, they had to go in and do what? Kill everybody. I'm telling you, if it's hard enough in a war to kill a man that's evened up with you. Okay? He's got what you got, and you fight and you kill him. That's bad enough. People go through that and makes them crazy. Now you got to go in, kill women, kill children. In your life, there's sin that you like thinks cuddly. You got to kill it. It's hard to kill those cute, cuddly things that seem innocent, but they're going to grow up and be your enemy. And so, sometimes the Lord asks you to do something, and you, I'm going to do it. And then the actuality of it comes, the nuts and bolts of it, can you do it? The Lord told me what I had to do once, and it meant losing everything I had at the time. But He also gave me the courage behind my faith when He told me to do that, He tells people all the time to do things that seem crazy to them, and seems really crazy to the people around them. And they're getting all kind of flack and interference, static, from the very people that should be shutting up and saying, okay, if you heard from God, let him do it. If he didn't hear from God, it won't come to anything. But if he did hear from God, I don't want to be one of the ones pushing against it. Let's see how it plays out. Or get on your knees and hear from God too. And there's always that. And so, anyway, we're going to be judging these angels, and then we're going to judge the world. And we're not going to be vindictive, and we're not going to be on a revenge trip when we do it. I think we're going to be trying to get as many people in as we can. Amen. That's what I think. So, go to the next one. If then you have judgments of things pertaining to this life, set them to judge who are least esteemed in the church. Now, that's... It still strikes me odd, but and I studied it out a whole lot because some of these commentaries and stuff where I went to see if they were saying the same thing that I know the Lord told me, they were way off. They were saying that was like a statement of, do you do that in your church? Pick the least esteemed? No, he was making a statement. Do that. Pick the least esteemed. Why? Because usually the least esteemed of man is the highest, highly esteemed of God, for one thing. But the second thing is, we went through Joseph. When Joseph brought Israel into Egypt, Pharaoh said to him, if you have any men of business among them, let them overlook my cattle. Because shepherds and cattle people were an abomination to the Egyptians. They didn't want to have anything to do with it. So, if you guys know how to do this, we'll let you do it. And they were great cattlemen from Abel.
Let me say something, farmers. We were cattlemen. We weren't sheepmen.
Yeah.
Sheep, if you put them in a field and you don't watch them and maintain them, they will eat it down to the dirt.
And what's left, they'll cut up with their little hoofs.
So there is still that, mindset. Not vicious or anything, but there's a reasonable request on that.
So, yeah. Well, they didn't like anybody. They didn't like any tending of cattle. They thought it was beneath their dignity to tend any kind of animals. And so then they went and lived there 430 years before they got loose. And only a few generations after that, David come on the scene. And Samuel come and run the six boys past them, and none of them was the one. And he goes, "Do you have any more sons?" He goes, "Yes, I have the youngest. He's out tending the sheep." Well, the true thing of that wasn't that he was the youngest. It was he was least esteemed. Okay? Low man on the totem pole, low seniority. You get the job, kid. Get out there. But really, he gave him a job for being the least esteemed. He gave him a important job because your cattle was your money. He was watching over your bank account. He was the one getting himself between the wolves and the bears and the lions. And so he had quite a job on his hands, but he was the least esteemed. And that just goes to show how things are. Pastors are tending the Lord's sheep, but they're always least esteemed. Seems like they can't catch a break. It's like, if you do it this way, you're wrong. If you do it that way, you're wrong. But I want you to do something. And so he said, pick the least esteemed. So I asked the Lord about that a few years back. But I was reading a book, and this guy come up with that cockamamie thing. And so I said, I'm going to just double check that I know what I'm talking about. And so I did. Now, the Lord said, it's what I told you. And the example I gave was me and Danny with a car. Something went wrong. Okay? Now, I got two son-in-laws that know all about cars. There's maybe somebody in here. I know a little about cars. Danny knows a little about cars. So we know just enough to get himself in trouble with the Lord because we think we can judge this situation. And we're going to go by experience. We're going to go by whether I like the person that's in trouble or not. We're going to go by a lot of things. There might be circumstances that make the person look guilty, but he isn't. Okay? There's all kind of things that can come up that are just not what happened. So what do? We find somebody least esteemed. Now, how would you like it if I come up to you and said, the elders got together and we got this problem and we hashed it out. And we determined you're the man for the job because you're the least esteemed. Kind of a nice left-handed compliment, you know, dubious distinction. But what are we really saying? I picked on Gail. I asked her, did you know anything about cars? She said, no. She knows just enough to go down the road, where the key is, where the gas is. Do you know how to open the hood? Okay, well, what? Hey, praise the Lord. Okay? There's a few things she knows. Yeah. There's some things she knows, but she's not, I would have to say, as far as mechanics of a car, I don't esteem her very much in that category. Okay? So, that's what we're looking for. Somebody who knows zilch, has no preconceived ideas, has no idea when we talk to her about what we're even talking about. So now, what's the advantage of that? How is she going to determine what's right and what's wrong? Well, Paul only talked to spirit-filled people. Okay? He assumed you were operating in the spirit and that everything that you did was in that vein. So now, Gail knowing absolutely nothing, if I gave her a name of a part in the car, she wouldn't know where it was or anything. So how is she going to determine who's right and who's wrong? She is going to have to depend on the Lord. Amen. She's going to have to go to the Lord and say, "What's up? Show me." Because now we got a clean slate the Lord can talk to and get the thing right. And that's what the Lord's looking for. He doesn't want you to be defrauded. Okay? He wants it to come out right. But now, after going through all that and showing us how to do that, Paul always shows you a better and higher way. Take the high road. Okay? So, go to the next one. I speak to your shame. Is it so that there is not a wise man among you? No, not one that shall be able to judge between his brethren. Go to the next one. But brother goeth to law with brother, and that before the unbelievers. Okay? Now, he's closed the case on this. And he wants to show you this higher thing. So let's go to the next one. Now, therefore, there is utterly a fault among you, because you go to law one with another. Why do ye not rather take wrong? Why do you not rather suffer yourselves to be defrauded? And that word, or go back there a second. Because I went to look up that word suffer. Sorry, it's not in the original. So it ain't in the Strong's Concordance. That whole suffer yourselves to, anytime you see that bracket on this, it means it's not in the original. So it, sometimes it reads okay without it, and sometimes it's just there because the grammar needs to be there. But why do you not rather... Why don't you just be defrauded? Okay? That kind of sticks in our craw. Okay? Somebody does something bad, and you just take it. Turning the other cheek. And, you know, it's a pride thing sometimes. I'm sure it is all the time. You just don't want to end up on the bottom of that heap. You want to be on the top of the heap. But that's not Christ-like. Okay? And you really got to speak to the Lord about it, because I'm not going to give you some kind of blanket statement that that's how it always is. But for the most part, you know, when they invented bulletproof glass... Chuck Sexton's brother was one of the early pioneers of putting this glass in the banks. In fact, for the longest time, he had the monopoly on it. And you could take a .44 Magnum if you bought the right stuff. It came in different thicknesses, and they had one that would stop a .44 Magnum. Okay? And the person on the wrong side, on the bank side, didn't get hurt. And any innocent bystanders didn't get hurt, because it didn't just stop it and ricochet it where it could hit somebody else. That thing hit and dropped like a rock. It absorbed all the energy and let the thing fall down. And sometimes I think the Lord would like it if we'd learn that principle, to take the hit and have the capacity to take the hit and stop the whole matter right then and there. And you just don't do that because you want to. In the first place, you're going to have the capacity before the bullet hits you. So you can't just have it hit you and then somehow overcome it. You have to have the capacity and everything to overcome it before it happens. And that means I spend a lot of time with the Lord and take on His nature and take on His vision and everything of why this is going to happen, and it just doesn't happen overnight. Go ahead.
That's just excellent what you're saying, because with the glass from the bank,
yeah.
I think you all appreciate, you know, the different materials. If you anneal it or temper it, there's a process there. It has to go through before it becomes that glass that can withstand that.
Yes.
There's a process that it goes through.
It's what it's made out of. That's right. Now this is something. I'm going to close with this because he wants time to pray. In Hebrews 11, we all know the faith chapter, and it tells you all, goes through all the Old Testament up to the modern times of that time, of all the people that had faith and did some action, and they won. Okay? If you go to Hebrews 12, please. Excuse me. I'm going to read, actually, don't go there, I'll just read it. But the end of chapter 11, 39, says, "And these all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise, God having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect." Then chapter 12 says, "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses," okay, and that word compass is all the direction, right? We are compassed about. In every direction, we have witnesses. "Let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience." Okay? Patience is a big thing. It allows you to absorb wrong. Okay? "And let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto" who? Jesus. The author, or the captain, the archagon is the Greek word. Okay, he's the captain and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. Okay, he took a wrong. Was he guilty? He wasn't guilty. "Despising the shame," okay? In other words, he just, you know, if something's shameful to us, we want to overcome it or somehow gain our face back. He didn't do that. He despised the shame. In other words, he just, it didn't bother him. Okay? "And is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds." And that's that word heart. Okay, is there any more? Or is there? Oh, okay. So, if you need an example, he's the example of how he was not guilty, yet he let himself be convicted and put on a cross. He didn't even utter a word in his own defense. He only answered questions. "Are you the king of the Jews?" "You said it." You know, he never tried to defend himself. He never tried to cast aspersions on his enemies. They even gave an example that in Jude, I think, where it said when Satan came to try to contend with Michael for the body of Moses, it says he didn't bring a railing accusation even against Satan. All he said was, "The Lord rebuke you." And so, that's something when you think about it. We'd like to take Satan and twist his head off and throw it on the ground and step on it. But even Michael didn't bring a railing accusation against him. He just said, "The Lord rebuke you."